Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go. Now, before, right after we left the air yesterday is when news of Lawrence Maroney's trade to Denver came to fruition. We were able to get it through a couple of sources, and then EEI ran with it. I think Adam Schefter also had it from ESPN. I think Jason Luckenfor from NFL Network even had it as well. So let's start with this. You know, I know, and you know as well as anybody, that over the last few years, I've had my fair share of say against Lawrence Maroney. I just thought he was a classic underachiever. I thought he was a guy that should have gotten, and perhaps, yeah, should have gotten more out of his ability, especially for being a number one draft choice.
Sure.
That having been said, you know, let me see if we can put this the proper way, because I want to give him his due here. That may shock some people based on some of the things we've said about him in the past. But first of all, Lawrence was generally a team guy. He didn't really gripe or complain a whole heck of a lot. He kept his mouth shut when we knew he really wanted to say something, especially when he broke his shoulder a couple of years ago.
Yeah,
and we're all accusing him of being, you know, we're accusing him of being, you know, I don't know, weak. Soft, a non-physical football player when probably that was not the case. So let me say this. He was and still is a very nice guy. Good young man.
Oh, God, yeah, sure.
Solid, upstanding citizen, does things the right way, did everything that the Patriots asked him to do. For whatever reason, whether it be his talent or his running style or for whatever it might have been, it didn't work out in New England to New England's satisfaction. And I thought it was kind of telling. Some of the first comments that he had to the Denver media was, you know, you haven't seen the best of me yet.
Well, and when are we going to see it, though?
Well, okay, and that's a legitimate question. And I know that's the question that all Patriots fans, including people such as yourself and myself, have been asking, you know, for now this is the fifth year.
And
we hadn't seen anything. So that's why the deal was made. And Bill even alluded to that earlier today during his press conference at the stadium when he basically said, you know, we just thought it was best to kind of move on from here.
Yeah, and the reason it's not that we were specifically targeting Maroney because we had something out for him. It's the nature of the position he plays. If he were a quarterback, he would be given the benefit of the doubt for – you know, 3, 4, 5 years, developmentally, he would have that leeway. He would have that sort of grace period of, you know, you're young, you have to learn the offense, you have to, you know, the game has to slow down for you, all that, all the things we hear about quarterbacks who eventually become elite players in this league. Not all of them become elite players instantly in their rookie years. It's almost unheard of that happens.
Right.
The rare exception being the Matt Ryans and the Joe Flaccos of the last couple of years who, you know, were rookie of the year level players. Running backs in this league either have it or they don't by year one or year two. And that's on full display week in and week out in this league. Mm-hmm. You know what you're going to have as a running back by your second, maybe at the most your third year. After that, there's no great leap in productivity usually. That's just the way it is. And we haven't seen any sort of great leap out of Lawrence Maroney in the 4+ years that he was here.
You know, and obviously you and I are in agreement on this, and a lot of fans I know over the course of the last couple of years especially have been on me about that, and that's fine. I understand that. I just never saw the kind of ability we expected him to have for being a number one draft pick. The other thing that we had issue with Maroney was he's a guy that was right or wrong. He was accused of being too much of a side-to-side kind of guy. Never attacked the hole directly.
Indecisive would be the word I would use.
He was indecisive in deciding on moving to his holes, to his cuts, where he should be, and all that kind of stuff. You know, and obviously there's some familiarity in Denver with him between, you know, not only his head coach but also his position coach there, who I believe also had him at the University of Minnesota. You know, he'll have an opportunity to basically start over again for not a whole lot of turnover. I mean, the Patriots were Patriots, in case for some reason you don't know the deal, the Patriots traded Maroney to Denver along with a sixth-round pick, in return received a fourth-round pick back. So it's Maroney and a six for a four in return for next year.
Right.
That's the deal. That's how it came through. Now, that may or may not seem like value to
you. I think it's fair value for what you're giving away.
What the team got out of Lawrence Maroney, yeah. I'd say that's fair value. We moved up two rounds in the draft. You ostensibly got a player who, in the fourth round as compared to the sixth round, has a better chance of making a roster next year. So what were you going to get with Lawrence Maroney? Nothing. He was going to be cut after this year, and I think we all agreed that. Mm-hmm. And Bill even intimated as much during his news conference earlier today. Mm-hmm. That, you know, Maroney's time had passed on. He's a good kid. We wish him well. We're moving on.
I just wonder, I was surprised more at the timing of the move going into week two of the regular season. What changed in their mind from last year or this past offseason?
You know, I don't know that there was any one thing. I think it was probably taking a look at the injury report and seeing that Maroney, you know, he's had a thigh injury recently?
I believe that's what it was.
It was a thigh injury that kept him on the inactive list this last week, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so I think they just kind of looked at the inactive list and looked at, you know, his participation in practice, and it wasn't there. And I think it's just an accumulation of things. It's kind of like, you know what? I'm sure that there had been some talking for a while about, hey, would you take him, and what could we get in return, and yada, yada. I don't think that this is something that would have just sprung out there overnight. I'd be surprised if that had happened.
What's going on with Denver's backfield at the moment?
You know what? I don't even know. I don't even know that. My guess would be that there's a slot or there was an injury or something that allowed them to be a little bit more proactive than this, and the Patriots said, yeah, sure, you know, what can we get in return? Mm. I mean, you know, who knows? Maybe this is – I tend to believe it's something they've been working on for a while, and they waited for the right roster moves to open up where they could add him, and then the Patriots could kind of move on with this thing. It says volumes. For those that like Lawrence, and I know there are some of you that like Lawrence, not only as a person – we all liked Lawrence as a person, okay? That's unequivocal. We're all in agreement there. A lot of us didn't like him as a football player for his style not being what we thought was conducive to success with the Patriots.
Right.
But those that thought that Maroney did or did not get a fair shake realized this, that the Patriots had seen enough. That was the bottom line here, and they just decided, you know what, even if we have three running backs who are all over 33 years old, yeah, you know, and another one in Ben Jarvis Green-Ellis who got a lot of time last week as well, that they'd rather give the ball to, should say everything you need to know about how the organization feels about Maroney, the football player.
Right.
Now, this also tells me that, you know, based on the age and the wear and the tear and everything here, the Patriots have to be thinking running back in the offseason, whether it's through free agency, you know, depending upon what the CBA looks like next
year.
Right,
if there is free agency.
If there is free agency, or through the draft, one or the other. Don't you think?
Yeah, because you can't – I mean, maybe for this year you can try to roll the dice and see what you get out of the old crew and the new guys and Ben Jarvis Green-Ellis. But you have two first-round picks. You have two second-round picks. I think you have to look more to the draft than you do to free agency, only because I don't – with all the uncertainty of the labor negotiations, I don't think you can count on that. You can count on the draft. That's going to happen regardless of whether there's a lockout.
Yeah.
So I think you should – you know, the personnel department should start looking at very seriously the top running back recruits in the draft.
Well, you know, you've got a pretty good size, you know, hopefully a pretty high draft pick coming up in April.
Now,
depending upon where the Raiders finish.
The other thing to consider, John, too, is when they took Maroney, they weren't known for taking running backs this team, mm-hmm, that high, under this administration anyway. You have to wonder whether or not that's playing a factor in their mind at all, is that, that you know, that that's a position that they don't want to risk that high up in the draft.
It might be. It might be. I feel like, you know, they've got to do something because they got three guys who are 33, 34 years of age.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. I'm just saying.
And the one young kid you have at 25 is you know, law firm there.
Sure.
And he's got, like, no experience, so, you know, relatively speaking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, two names come right to the top of the list as far as I'm concerned for next year in the draft.
Don't even say Mark Ingram.
Well, I was going to say Mark Ingram.
I knew you were. That's why I said that, Charlie.
And I was also going to say John Clay. Wisconsin.
Okay. I haven't seen much of him, so I can't
He's
really...
big, tough, strong. He's got good foot speed. He's got, you know, good acceleration. I mean, I almost didn't want to think of Clay because, you know, I heard somebody mention the other day Clay is a prototypical Big Ten back, and I'm like, well, what the hell is that? Because I thought we just had that in Lawrence Maroney.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure I want to go there, although I will tell you that Clay is definitely a north-south guy, which is what I think the Patriots really are sort of craving. You know, they haven't really had a north-south guy since, well, certainly since Corey Dillon. And I think Clay seems to be cut in that mold, except he might not be as big and as physical, but he certainly got the speed factor. So do yourself a favor, and Patriots fans, those of you who are listening to the program today, do yourself a favor and watch a Wisconsin football game and get a little time in on John Clay, and let's talk about it throughout the course of the season. Let me know what you think of Clay and if he'd be worth it, because frankly, I think that he, you know, certainly looks like a promising prospect that could be in that, you know, hopefully mid-range of the first round, which is where you're certainly hoping to be. At the minimum.
Well, you could be in the top 10,
with the pick
too.
That you have, yeah. And if you're top 10, I would give entry guess and say you got a shot at a guy like Ingram if you're top 10.
Yeah. I need to – I mean, I've seen Ingram play, obviously, but I need to be convinced a little bit more that he's NFL legit.
Well,
and not just,
you know,
a great college running back.
Okay. I think that's fair because he did win the Heisman as a sophomore. And, you know – Heisman Trophy isn't necessarily the best player. It's the player who had the best season.
And it, not only the best player, it's the best college player.
Yes, correct.
Which doesn't guarantee there's going to be a great pro player.
No, but I would tell you that, you know, based on what I've seen of Mark Ingram all too much, actually, I think the kid Richardson who backs up Ingram is every bit as good,
yeah,
probably has the potential to be better.
Yeah, that's kind of... Andy and I were talking about that in the office the other day.
But Ingram, to me, looks very much like the second coming of Emmitt Smith.
Well, if that's the case, then I'll take him.
Well, he has, to me, a similar style. He runs low to the ground. He's got good speed. He's got good side-to-side ability. He's got, you know, he's got miss-ability, as I like to call it. Mm-hmm. He's got good, strong power. I think he's got, you know, Emmitt Smith characteristics in him. I don't want to compare him to Emmitt. It's not fair. Not fair to him, even if he did win a Heisman.
Yeah.
But I just, the back that I think of when mm-hmm. I see Mark Ingram is Emmitt Smith at the University of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Reminds me a lot of him.
Okay.
So,
I'll
keep
a closer eye.
Yeah, for what it's worth, there it is. If you're looking for more of that big back, you know, the guy that can combine some power with speed, then Clay might be your guy out of Wisconsin.
I'm just looking
for good choices there.
I'm just looking for someone who's going to be productive. I don't really necessarily care what his style of running is. I just want someone who's productive, someone who can get you the 115, 120 yards. Touchdown or two a game, you know, consistently.
I think either one of those guys can be that. They can be the feature back in that offense.
If you're a speed guy getting your yards on the outside, fine. Catching passes out of the backfield. If you're a tough in-between-the-tackles runner, fine. I don't care how they do it. I just want them to have somebody who can do it.
Let's also state here now that in terms of the way defenses are going in the NFL, having outside ability, having speed – isn't necessarily
an advantage.
Yeah, simply because you've got more and more, you know, speed guys on the outside, either playing end or a rush linebacker.
So you think the pendulum is swinging back into the John Riggins style of runner that we saw back in the early mid '80s?
I think it can be. Yes, I think it may be. I think that's possible. You know, all things in life are cyclical, okay? I mean, let's face it. All things in life are definitely cyclical. We'll actually end up going back to the straight eye formation days? And no, probably not. But I do think that the Patriots would love to find a guy that could be a Corey Dillon back there for them. That can pound it out and give you 1,500 yards and be the feature back for 4, 5, 6 years. If, of course, you can stay relatively healthy taking that kind of pounding, I think that would set up your pass game immeasurably to the point where you could be darn near unstoppable in this league. If you got a guy that can pound between the tackles, that when he's given a crease, he can find that crease and then utilize his speed rather than having to get it around in, because you got so many outside linebackers now and teams that play big nickel packages, just where they're going to be able to get around that end, and they're going to lessen your capability of being a fast team in the offensive backfield.
All right,
just sort of a trending thing. I think that they would prefer to have that. Doesn't mean that they are going to get that. So here we go. Maroney's out, for lack of a better phrase. Ben Jarvis Green Ellis is in. He'll be getting, the bulk, I think, of the carries beyond Fred Taylor and or Sammy Morris, in short yardage situations. Kevin Faulk is still your third down back, as he always has been. And then Benny will be in there, playing that role. Let's also not forget now, on the practice squad, Javaris James. They brought him in for a reason, did they not?
Well, I think it's too early to say.
Well, but this is his opportunity now, because conceivably you like to keep five backs in there if you can. Conceivably, this would be an opening if he can show enough in practice, show enough ability.
Well, do you need five backs on your active roster? I mean, I know they've
done it
before.
Well, at this stage of the game, no. But I'm just saying, I think we all realize before this year is over that there's going to be an opportunity to activate him just because of attrition.
Well, you know who I'd rather see? I know this sounds a little strange. We talked about this at the end of PFW. I'd almost rather see an outside linebacker be activated.
Name?
Sean Crable. He's already on the team.
Well,
he's already on the practice squad. John, they only have three outside linebackers.
Okay. Crable's kind of like Maroney where I'm concerned, even though Crable hasn't had the time. Or hasn't had the ability on the field. He's got to get on the field. Let's see him on the field first.
I know.
If we can see him on the field and we can see that he's got some ability to get to the quarterback, I'm all for that.
I really worry about this defense, John, going too small by adding all of these defensive backs.
They're doing it because they want to be faster. They want to be quicker on defense. And, of course, the X factor is still being able to stop the running game if you're going to get quicker on the defensive side of the ball. There are two goals in mind defensively, Eric, and you know this as well as anybody covering this team day in and day out. Two goals in mind in the offseason that Bill Belichick had for this defense. Number one, younger. Number two, faster.
Well, more aggressive?
Well, okay. I think that has to go without saying, though. But younger and faster, you had to be. Because this defense over the last couple of years was old and slow. Okay? We can agree on that, can we not?
Yeah. But okay. I also think they didn't address their biggest problem.
Outside line, rush
pass
in?
Rush.
Outside linebacker?
Pass
okay.
rush, yeah.
Well, perhaps then, number one, what they thought they had on hold was good enough. Or number two, they just misevaluated.
What they had on who? I'm sorry?
What they had in the fold already
in the
was
fold,
good enough.
In the fold. Oh, I thought you said somebody's name.
Yeah, no. What they had it was already good enough. And number two, they just did not evaluate properly. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to go out there and sign an outside linebacker just for the sake of bringing one in. You got to bring one in that can play.
Well, it could very well be Marcus Morrell again.
Okay. And I heard you guys talk about that. I'm like, well, if it was Marcus Morrell, then why the hell was he the 53rd guy on the roster already to begin with? How valuable could he really be if he was good enough to be cut to activate Ojinaka?
Well, that's kind of what we asked Bill on Monday, we being, the collective we in the media, and his response was that, well, we felt good enough to put Morrell in the game the day before. So,
but there isn't somebody else on that active roster that you could have swapped spots with that wasn't going to play? Who was inactive for the game, let's say?
No, look, I'm on your side, John. I really am. I thought for sure Steve Maneri was going to be the guy that gets cut.
I just don't think that Marcus Morrell, such as it is the guy that you're looking for. Maybe he will be. Right. Maybe this is strictly a procedural move and they expect to bring him back in. You know, I don't know. But if I'm Marcus Morrell and the Patriots are waving me like that, I'm trying to cut myself another deal. I just played last week.
Right.
And now you're cutting me to activate an offensive lineman?
I'm with you. I thought for sure, since Ojinaka's an O-lineman and they had to make room for him, that the reason they brought in Steve Mannieri as an undrafted rookie free agent who was cut by the Texans was just to have an offensive lineman fill that Ojinaka spot. And then when Ojinaka was ready, they would get rid of the O-lineman.
Okay.
I was stunned. I really was. I didn't expect it at all. Just because of – not because of Marcus Morrell is some great outside linebacking pass rusher. Just because they don't have anybody out at the position. I didn't think they could afford to do it.
Well,
but they surprise me every week.
Yeah, well, again, that's why they do what they do and why we do what we do, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose.
So I guess that'll have to be a situation that, you know, continues to play itself out. There will be a little bit of musical chairs involved, I think, where the Patriots roster is concerned.
Right.
So Ojinaka's in. Morrell is out for the time being. Are they trying? Is he? I guess he. How long does he have to try to clear waivers before they can add him to the practice squad?
Who are you talking about?
Morrell.
He doesn't have practice squad eligibility.
Oh, so he was outright waived.
Yeah.
Okay. So he has no eligibility.
He's played
whatsoever.
In 27 games, I believe, over 3 or 4 years.
Then that would explain it.
Yeah, he's long since forfeited his eligibility for the practice squad.
Okay. Well, then if nobody picks him up, then obviously you try to re-sign him whenever you have a roster move to make.
Yeah, if you feel that good about him.
And I think the jury would have to be out on that.
I mean,
you did have him in the game, but then again, you
had
made him expendable.
Right, you had to have him in the game because you had nobody else.
Okay, but you made him expendable knowing that he had no, and the Patriots obviously knew at the time that he had no practice squad eligibility, and yet you still cut him.
I know.
What does that tell you?
I know.
It's
mind-boggling.
Well, it's, as we're fond to say, it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, I was stunned when the, you know, we talked all offseason, who's going to be the starting outside linebackers? Well, the answer was no one.
Yep.
They hit zero outside linebackers at the first snap of the game. Zero.
Are you of the opinion that there are still options out there, you know, maybe even via trade?
Oh, via trade, anything's possible, but not on the free agent market.
Mm-hmm.
Not unless you want to bring back your old friend, Mend More Fences. I think it's a little late for that, but...
Which old friend are we talking about?
AD.
Oh, seriously?
I'm just saying, that's the only option out there on the free agent market that has any sort of...
I think we all realize that ship
potential, familiarity, anything.
Yeah. I mean, for those that aren't aware, he visited with the Jets on Monday, and the Jets didn't sign him.
Yeah, this is now the second time that they visited, or he's visited with them,
yes.
And they haven't signed.
And the talk was is that, you know, you weren't going to sign him anybody until after the first week, simply because veteran free agents like that, if you wait until after week one, you don't owe them for the entire season. You know, you can pay them the veteran's minimum, and then when
they're not guaranteed,
it's not guaranteed money for the whole year.
Right.
So that's why you wait until after week one to sign these free agent veterans. So the deal was that if they were going to sign him, it was going to have to be after week one. Well, they brought him in on Monday, talked to him, no signing. He flew, Thomas, Adalys Thomas, we're talking about, Thomas flew down to Miami to work out yesterday.
Yes.
And still no signing.
That's right. Saw that report.
So, if we are to believe those reports to be true, and the Jets and the Dolphins are both going to pass on the guy?
Well,
yikes.
Yeah, I mean, a move could still be made by the end of the week, too. So.
Oh, yeah, I suppose it could. I, there's no question. I suppose that could happen. But I'm just saying, you know, if they were chomping at the bit, there's certainly a funny way of showing it.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I agree.
That's really kind of all that's out there. All right, so that's a ton of stuff to get to, and obviously we needed to kind of recap and go over the Lawrence Maroney deal because we wish him well. Like we said, it's a shame it didn't work out for him in New England. He's a good guy. He's a good team player, nice young man. It just didn't work out for him in New England. Hopefully he'll have an opportunity to prove himself and everybody else around here wrong through some playing time in Denver. Obviously, Pats fans hope that it never comes at the expense of the Patriots, but you know how those things work. Sometimes they turn around and come back and bite you. Mm. The Patriots have now four running backs on the active roster. The Jets are not without their problems as well over the course of the last 24 hours. We talked about it a little bit on the show yesterday. Chris Jenkins is out for the year. He's torn ACL on the same knee that he tore last year, which could definitely mean career-threatening as far as Jenkins is concerned. Mm. They have agreed to a contract apparently today with Howard Green, defensive tackle Howard Green, who ironically was the same guy they signed to replace Jenkins last year. And they seemed to make out okay with that, did they not?
They did. I mean, they were still the best defense in the league.
Yeah.
Even without, yeah. I mean, that's even what Bill said today. So, I guess the silver lining for them is that they've already gone through this and they know how to adapt to it. And I still think they're going to be one of the best defenses in the league, if not the best. How much better could they have been with that
they had
dimension.
The potential, I think, to be, you know, a championship contending team with that in the fold if everybody had been healthy. You've got a run-stuffing tackle, you've got, you know, fast, strong, active linebackers, and you have, you know, one of the best, if not the best, shutdown corner in the NFL on your defense. That has all the makings of, you know, a Super Bowl team.
Sure.
So I understand some of, not all of, but I understand some of the preseason hype surrounding the Jets, Hard Knocks notwithstanding.
Right.
The thing that I don't understand about the Jets is basically coming to fruition. I was never that sold on Mark Sanchez last year at quarterback, and obviously, you know, he struggled through the preseason, and he struggled against the Ravens, although the Ravens also have a pretty good defense in their own right. If you watch the game at all, you know, really seriously on Monday, you learn that. So I don't know that I can really gain a lot of, and I talked a little about this yesterday. I said, you know, well, obviously I'll come up with my prediction for the game on Thursday as we normally do. And, you know, before what I saw on Monday night, I was definitely leaning toward the Jets. After the game on Monday night, I was a little bit more middle of the road thinking, you know, based on what I saw from the Patriots and what I saw from the Jets, that certainly the Patriots have a fighting chance at the Meadowlands, you know, coming up Sunday afternoon. Beyond that, I'm not sure that I'm ready yet to go completely into the Patriots camp, although I've seen where the Pats were made, what, a point and a half, 2-point favorites?
I have not seen the spread. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was 1.5 that I saw earlier today. So if you're a road favorite and the home team is generally considered to get, what, 6 points at home?
Well, at least 3.
Well, okay. Well, anywhere from 3
anywhere
to 6.
Anywhere from 3 to 6. I would.
And you are a home and you are a 1.5-point road favorite. It means the Patriots would be about a touchdown favorite, at least, if they were playing here at Gillette.
Mm. I think, John, historically, Week 2 is the toughest week in the NFL to pick.
Why?
Because Week 1, things are really uncertain as far as, you know, which teams are actually going to improve, which ones are going to take a step back, and so forth. And if I think most of the time your gut reaction in Week 1 is what ends up taking place. At least for me, that's what I've noticed over the years. Week 2, you based on the things that happened in Week 1, you sort of fall into the trap of, oh, you know, like a team like, let's say, just as an example, like Detroit had a good game on the road against Chicago. Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, they must be taking that next step. They're going to be a good team. I'll take them in the upset this week or whatever. You tend to fall into too many of those traps in Week 2. And things tend to balance themselves out after the second week.
Right.
So in my mind, Week 2 is by far the toughest week in the NFL to pick, barring those Week 16, 17 games when playoffs positions are already decided and teams are giving their starters rest or whatever. But as far as the bulk of the schedule goes, I say Week 2 is the hardest one to pick.
You know, that's I think that's a fair assessment. You're right. Teams are still trying to figure themselves out a little bit. You're not entirely certain what you're going to get.
Perfect.
Teams do. I also think the biggest jump in improvement comes from Week 1 to Week 2. I think we've seen that. We've seen that before.
Perfect example, the 03 season, 31-0.
Mm-hmm.
Loss
mm-hmm.
at Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone thinks, oh, that's going to be a terrible year. They're all the turmoil, this and that. The next week, they go out and they destroy the Eagles
right
on the road. You just don't, I mean, you really, you can't put too much stock into what you see in Week 1 in most cases.
Yeah.
Which is why I think week two is so tough. After that, things start to – and we've talked about this on the show before. The first – you can look at the NFL season like four quarters of a game. The first 4 weeks, you're sort of establishing who you are or who you want to be. By week eight, halftime of the season, you've sort of become who you're going to be. Mm-hmm. Week 9 through 12, 13, depending on your bye week, you solidify that position. And, you know, the end of the season, it's foregone conclusion at that point what you're going to be for the most part. So these first few games are really the toughest ones to pick.
Yep. As evidenced by the fact that, you know, I picked incorrectly this last week. So
you weren't the only one. You weren't the only one, my friend.
Yeah, you took a little of abuse, I think, on some of these emails. We'll get to them here. Let's take a break here, if we can, and then I want to get back to a couple of other issues. Number one, you know, we'll continue looking at the Jets. Coming up in hour two of the program, we will have Dan Leberfeld from Jets Confidential join us, and Bob Wischusen, who's the Jets radio play-by-play announcer, to start looking at the matchups itself. But right at the tail end of PFW, you know, good phone call. I think it was Anthony who called in and talked about some of the crowd and noise issues, and a lot of people have chimed in their thoughts via email on that subject. So we'll continue with some of that. Some of you have also given some running back thoughts as well with the departure of Lawrence Maroney and potential guys to look at in the future. I want to jump into some of those. In the meantime, you can join us in the program. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. So fire off an email. You can call us at 508-543-7482. You can also Facebook chat if you like. Just friend me at John Rook, and we can chat via Facebook if you'd like to do that. And we can exchange some news and notes and ideas and go along those lines. Eric Scalavino from PFW is in the playbook. We'll be right back in just a moment.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
Pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network. All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst. Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com radio.
Hey, don't go yet, sir.
But the light turned green.
Well, you don't go till I say so. You play by my rules. My rules. Ball start, loss of 5 yards, still first down.
What are you talking about?
Unsportsmanlike conduct, 10 yards.
Unsportsmanlike is 15 yards.
Move the chains.
You are a crossing guard.
Personal foul, 15 yards.
And stop blowing that whistle.
Think football? Bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warm-ups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Delay of game, but, 5 yards,
but
first down.
But you're not...
Keep the change, patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services N.A., Bank of America, N.A. member FDIC, copyright 2009, Bank of America Corporation.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines Flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Hey, Brian, it's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay. Dad, Tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. And you want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Yeah, don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on the New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together, talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery at masslottery.com.
Day, week two, Pats, Jets, 4:15 at the brand new Meadowlands Stadium in East Rutherford, New Jersey, coming up this Sunday. Eric Scalavino, Patriot Football Weekly, joining us in the studio at Gillette Stadium. Fred calls this my mother's basement, but I prefer to call this the Fortress of Solitude.
It's your own basement, though, isn't
it? It is my own basement. And this is like Superman had his Fortress of Solitude. This is my Fortress of Solitude.
Okay.
So it will be, from here on out, regarded as Rook's Fortress of Solitude.
It's always going to be your basement, John. No matter how hard you try. It's like forcing the fans to be loud at the games. It's not going to work.
Well, that was a wonderful segue, Eric. You have a future in this business because that's exactly what I was going to roll into here. Obviously, the tail end of the PFW in Progress show, fans are talking about some of the audio issues. First of all, for those that might not have heard, we had the entire west side of the stadium. Speakers were out. At the game on Sunday, someone basically did not power down. It was not the normal crew, so you can't blame the normal people. There's somebody who should not have been messed with the system, didn't power the speakers down separately, so when they turned off the power, bang, it shorted everything out.
Was that for the whole game?
For the whole game.
Really?
In fact, I was told right after the game on Sunday that they'll be lucky to get replacement parts in for the next game.
Really?
Yes. The reason being is because the fuses that are used in that speaker system are no longer manufactured.
So what?
So you can see the stadium specially
manufactured them to.
Basically got to build them, and you got to pay through the nose for them. Oh, see, the stadium's only 9 years old, and your audio stuff is already out of date.
Wow.
That's a true story. An absolute true story. Our audio guys told whoever is in charge of such things at the stadium that, last year, while there were still spare parts available for sale, they needed to buy two or three just to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
They never did.
Oh.
And so now you've got basically replacement parts that need to be used that are not manufactured anymore. So I don't know what they're going to do. They said it would probably take all of the 2 weeks between games to get the problem fixed, if it could be fixed at all.
Wow.
So that's part of the issue that we had with the crowd. But, the larger issue at hand here is, quite frankly, I don't think you should. I mean, you can only take Pavlov's dog so far on a walk here. You know what I'm saying, Eric?
I think so.
I mean, you can lead the horse to the water. You can't make it drink. How many other stupid cliches do I have to put in here? Fans are either going to yell and scream or they're not, regardless of what you do. And Jason Dvorkin, who's the, game entertainment manager, and Gary Grodecki before him, they bust their butts trying to think of new and creative ways to get the fans into the game. Fact remains is that when you built the amenities into that stadium, more and more people like to go in the clubhouse. More and more people like to be, standing up on the decks. More and more people like to be schmoozing in the crowd because it's a place to be seen and all that kind of stuff. And less people are there for the game itself. Unlike at old Foxborough Stadium when the game was the game and it's all that it was.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know.
There's just more distractions. And so I think over 9 years' time, our crowd has turned from one of the best in the NFL to, no big deal.
I think that goes with all four sports here, though.
Well, yeah, there's no question that the decade of the aughts, the first decade of the 2000s, spoiled us all rotten here. You had three Super Bowl championships, you had two World Series titles, and, let's throw in a Celtics flag as well.
Yeah.
So, that's unprecedented, Really, it's unprecedented in Boston sports history, New England sports history. It's unprecedented.
87 was close.
Close. But to talk about the kind of dominance from three sports teams that you had over the course of, you know, 8 to 10 years, that's a remarkable run. And I think people got, as I like to call, they got fat and sassy. and I think Patriots fans are getting fat and sassy. And so, you know, yeah, we still do the first down thing and all that kind of thing. But the fans aren't into it. They're not into it. There are some things you can do musically that can help them. Frankly, as much as I love Crazy Train, you know, and as much as I think that's become a tradition for the Patriots, it's getting a little tired.
Yeah.
Okay? As much as I can play Thunderstruck, it's getting a little tired, you know? I mean, it's kind of like, you know,
even when you've been doing it for 78 years, like,
well,
you said,
I know,
it's,
exactly.
It's tough.
You know, Gary Glitter's Rock and Roll Part 2 or whatever it was finally ran its course, okay?
Well, you know, it was told to.
Well, we were told to let it run its course because, you know, the guy who produced the song and did all that stuff.
Which is ridiculous. I think the two should be separate.
Yeah, it should be, but, you know, it wasn't. And so, you know, but you'll find out that it's kind of run its course in a lot of other stadiums, too. And that's a song that's been around for 30 years.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, look, it's time
works,
to.
Though. That worked. That always worked.
Okay, it did. But again, I think we're ready for something new. We're ready for the next era of, you know, things to kind of catch on and move on and charge people up here. But the fans still have to take it upon themselves. And the only thing that's going to totally bring Patriots fans back into the atmosphere and make Gillette more of a quote-unquote Foxborough atmosphere is winning.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
Chris in Narragansett wrote, I think you can get more noise of the existing crowds if you get them to chant the same thing, like defense, defense. You know, we tried that. That's been done. We've done that. They put it up on the big, you know, screens at Gillette, you know, defense, boom, boom, D, you know, and it works a little, but there's no sustaining it. He said, to demonstrate the team dynamic, instead of having one defensive starter on the HD TV, like they had this last week with Brandon Merriweather, have the offense led by Brady in a group starting the chant, motivating the crowd, and have the special teamers in a group in another segment, even have the coaches, too. Well, that'll never happen.
Yeah, that's...
Okay? That'll never happen.
Baby steps here. Baby steps.
Yeah. Brady, that's not going to happen either. Having the whole group, that's not going to happen either.
No.
Okay? You might get one or two of the more outgoing personalities on the team to do that, like Merriweather has done. But beyond that, getting wholesale changes and guys to buy into that, no. It's just not going to happen. And you won't find that done basically anywhere.
Hey, John, I think we have a fan on the phone.
Shoot.
Who might want to chime in. Sean in Vancouver. What's up, Sean? You still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
What's up?
Hi.
Welcome inside the playbook, as John likes to say.
Thank you. It's nice to be here. I had one comment about Maroney, and we were questioning earlier in the show why it was done now as opposed to prior to the season or at other times. I think what we saw in Game 1 may have satisfied the Patriots coaches and anyone involved in that decision in determining what we have to offer in terms of the running game. Taylor ran 14 times for 71 yards. That's over 5 yards a carry. Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis looked good in his backup role, and Morris was good in short yardage. So, you know, he got his touchdown, and it basically was satisfactory without Maroney there, and having those big guards blocking the way they did, it just seems like we can survive, we can do well without Maroney, so let's see if we can get something right now, as opposed to prior to the season, we don't really know what we're going to do. We don't know what the season is going to bring.
Well, yeah, that's a fair point. I just think, didn't they know that before week one?
I don't necessarily think so, because in the preseason, things are so different. I mean, the game plan is different. You don't really know what's going to happen when things start. You don't know how everything's going to unfold. You don't know how people are going to really play until it actually gets going. I mean,
but you had all the last year with the same quintet of running backs. You had Maroney, Morris, Falk, Green Ellis, and Taylor.
Well, Taylor got hurt.
He did, but you knew what you got out of him. When he was healthy, he was producing. He was rushing for 100 yards. He was getting in the end zone. He still had a quick burst. You knew what you had.
Right.
From all
right, but he didn't have those tight ends blocking the way they do either. He didn't have Crumpler and Gronkowski just devastating at the line. So running the ball was not as successful. I mean, they did run the ball to some extent, but it wasn't as successful as I think it was in game one this season, and I think it might be a good sign to come.
Okay. All right. Fair point.
Another thing that I wanted to say is I sent an email earlier in regards to the fan noise issue.
Yeah, go ahead.
Here in Vancouver, Canada, the fans are just not knowledgeable and apathetic, and they wouldn't know what to do unless you told them. So,
just in general or about football?
In general. They're just not good sports fans. So in the football games here, the CFL, what they call football up here, the fans are told, verbally told, as well as the boards, to make noise. And the PA announcer says, make some noise, and then people get up and smash their chairs and make and yell, and they're the loudest in the CFL at that. So I don't know if John tries that at all or if you do that at Patriots games, because I'm not there. But it might be worth giving it a shot.
Yeah, there's all kinds of in-stadium promotional things. They added the noise meter for this past game, where there was like a little needle that would move as the crowd, you know, got louder and louder. But I just think, you know, we've even heard from some of our fans over in the UK who are diehard American football fans as well as, you know, European football fans, soccer fans.
Right.
And they say it's such a different experience watching a soccer game in Europe and being here and watching a football game in America, because they don't need any inspiration to get loud and know when to get loud during soccer games, they've told us.
Yeah, and they might be a bit too rowdy for some people.
They might be a little bit too rowdy, but I mean, like, they have the songs that they sing during games.
Right.
They don't need to have anything to stimulate them to make noise and to be loud. They know when they have to do it, and they do it spontaneously. They do it just because they love to be there, and they don't need anything other than the game to get them fired up. You know, they don't need any fabricated stimuli to get them excited.
And ideally, that's what we'd like in New England too. But it's not. Unfortunately, it's not the case for a lot of the fans. And I know that you have the visual stimuli, but does anyone actually say verbally, you know, make some noise?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Well, you're not really allowed to do that. Okay. We've tried that before in the past. You know, to an extent. And the NFL frowns upon that because they call that cheerleading. They don't like you leading the crowd. The PA announcer, public address, is not allowed to do that. And I've been threatened with fines over the years. And I don't know about you, but I don't make enough money to pay these fines.
No, so I don't blame you. Okay, that's against
you can't lead the crowd into something like that. And, in fact, I've been told we're borderline doing it with that whole first down thing that we do. So that's, you know, hey, it's incumbent upon the fans to do what they're supposed to do.
It is what it is.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, I guess here in the CFL, they don't have these rules, so they can do it here. But that makes sense, yeah. If the NFL says you can't do it, then yeah.
No, the NFL does stand for No Fun League, remember?
Sometimes. It's a much better game.
Very frustrating, though, at times with those kind of rules.
Yeah.
I mean, fans, you know, this isn't a tennis match.
Right.
You're not supposed to be quiet for, you know, while the players are out performing their task. You're supposed to make noise whenever the hell you want. That's what you pay all this money for.
Exactly. Yeah, it's part of the game. I mean, that's a lot of teams have that advantage, like Seattle, as they were saying before, you know, with the 12th man.
Right.
And I don't know how they got that going, because I don't think Seattle is much different from Vancouver, but somehow over the years they created that culture.
All right, Sean.
All right, thanks.
Thanks a lot,
Sean,
for the call.
Thanks. Appreciate that. I had a hard time kind of hearing him there, but I think I got the gist of most of it. You know, his concerns are certainly relevant. John sent an email here about the subject. He said, we can start off with playing the Kiss song, I Love It Loud. I think that's actually been a part of the repertoire in the past. He says, I listen to Matt Light complain about this every week. It's strange, but watching the game on Sunday, the crowd sounded loud, then hearing people who were there say otherwise was surprising. And another thing, whoever runs the screen at the stadium, pay attention. They always post the quiet please offense it works on the big screens. Well, don't tell us to be quiet if you want us loud.
Yeah.
You know, that's actually a good point. You know, we're asking people to be quiet while the offense goes. But, you know, they want you to be loud while the defense goes.
Well, but that's – if you're a football fan, you know
you
that's
should
the way
be to, that anyway. Yeah. Absolutely.
You should so know that that's how it works when you're
to tell you to be quiet while the home team is running the offense, I mean, you know, that's even more ridiculous than having you stand up, you know, when I say it's third down and eight. You know,
right.
I mean, that's just ridiculous, right. You know. That's crazy. Let me see if I can get a couple of more of these in here, Eric.
So ridiculous.
It is, Bill. It's totally ridiculous. Kyle from Manchester. Just wanted to comment about the noise talk. Like you said, I think it has a lot to do about the regions the teams are in. If you look at demographics, New Englanders are much older than other areas in the U.S. I would bet a lot of the noise issue is older people that do not want to make noise, and at other stadiums there are younger adults that are hollering all game long.
Oh, plenty of young people that go to these games.
I don't think it has anything to do with that.
I
also think, though, that there's an issue. The people that pay for their seats, the 50-yard lines, or between the 40s, you know, yelling at people to sit the hell down.
That's a fair point. That's definitely fair.
I've had that happen in front of me, literally, in front of me at the 40-yard line. And I'm like, what, are you nuts? This is a football game. Oh, my Lord, I couldn't believe it.
Right.
Howard in Connecticut says, let me preface with that. I generally get to one game a year. I was there in Section 132 on Sunday, and I thought it was one of the loudest games I have been to in a while. However, I did note that when it was time to make noise, the Patriots side fans were up much quicker than my section. Well, he was on the visitor's side, and I believe I explained why that happened. It's because the speakers were out on the visitor's side of the stadium. Totally out.
Yeah.
He says, I stood up along with a drunk guy next to me that I befriended that day and exhorted fans to get up and make noise, and even then, it was only a partial effort in most cases. I did note that many of the people around me were older fans. An old lady behind me told me how she has been in her seats since it was Schaefer Stadium, so maybe that plays into it, as she didn't seem the type to stand up and scream like I did. I was hoarse up through yesterday. As for arriving late and leaving early, traffic was crazy this week. It took me 45 minutes from 495 to P11, and usually that's a 15-minute ride as I get to the stadium at 10 or 10:30. Leaving early, I couldn't believe the number of empty seats at the end of the game. Well, it's because the Patriots had the game in hand, and people usually get out and tailgate. As far as getting in early, I don't know what to tell you. You've got to be prepared to be in the lot before 10 o'clock. If you're not in the lot by 10 o'clock, kiss it goodbye. It's just not going to happen. You know, all right. Let's go back to the phones, and again, see if you can kind of jack the level up for me a little bit, guys. Brooklyn Matt is on the line. Hey, Matt, how are you? Welcome inside the playbook.
Hey, what's up, John? Nice to talk to you again. I missed you on the off season. Hi,
oh,
how
I appreciate
you doing,
that, Matt? Thanks. What's up, Matt?
Man, look, it's Brooklyn Matt, and I'm inside the playbook. Okay, and I'm ripping some pages out, and I'm chucking them in the garbage. This is Jets week. Like Anthony from Naples said. Everybody needs to wake the F up over here. Even this show is putting me to sleep. You take the first half hour, you talk about some guy from Wisconsin I never heard of, and then Eric goes to practice squad material. Let's go, guys. What is going on up there in Patriots Nation? You got all this kick-ass material. You got big, fat Rex Ryan teed up on a platter. They got stomped last week. Jets Nation is in tatters, and they're ready for the taking. And I'm sitting down here in Brooklyn, almost getting in tussles on every street corner in my Tom Brady jersey. What are you guys doing up there?
Hey, Matt.
Sorry. Come on now.
Matt, we're taking our cue from the fans.
Oh, the fans? Oh, you want me to talk about the New England Patriots fans? The New England Patriots fans are the biggest uptight, stiff upper lip, non-expressive lat, and my mother is descended from the Mayflower. And I spent my whole childhood up there. And you gotta hit somebody over the head with an anvil to get them to start saying anything. What, you go to a New England Patriots game and you want to go to the restaurant? What's this? You know what you guys need up there? You need 58,000 Dagmars in the seat. I bet you if Dagmar went to a game, he'd make some noise.
Yes, he would, by the way. But, you know, don't say that about the Patriots restaurants. Patriot Place restaurants too loud.
Yeah, they're very good, actually.
Yeah, Mr. Kraft might hear you.
And you got Bob with shoes and queued up on the show later on? From WFAN?
Yes.
Hey, Bob with shoes and. This is Brooklyn Matt. I like to tell you and Joe Beningo, you can stick it with the Jets. And take Fairman on and dump him in a garbage can.
Yeah, baby.
All right. Now, that's what I want to hear more of.
He's going to get the kick out. Boom, right there.
I want the Jets fan. I want the J-E-T-S chant from you behind the board, and let's get it on. Thank you. I'll see you later.
John, I was having trouble hearing him. I don't know about you. He wasn't loud enough for my
No. That's good stuff. Brooklyn Matt, that's good stuff.
Wow, he better save some of that energy. It's still 4 days away before kickoff.
Yeah, that's true, but that's okay. He's in midweek mode, and I like that. That's good emotion. Good emotion. We need to do that. And partly Brooklyn Matt, the reason that we've been spending time doing other things in the opening hours is because we knew that our guests weren't going to be able to come on to the last half of the show. So we have to kind of build a crescendo to our guest later in the show.
Plus,
that makes
plus, John, you're in the basement. I'm sitting here behind the board. We're not in our usual
fortress of solitude.
Whatever. Don't force that on me. We're not in our usual spots behind the console over here. So yes, we're a little out of sorts today.
Yeah, but that's okay. He doesn't care.
The hot shots that have to do the television show on here were busy filming in the radio studio. So
were they taping in the studio? And
yeah,
you couldn't
Lord, I would call you a media whore, but I feel like that would be offensive to whores.
It sure would. So
and you weren't a part of that today?
No, I'm never a part of it, actually.
Oh, that's not right, Eric.
Well, you know.
So you miss out on TV, and your crumb for missing out on TV is spending an hour with me.
Yeah, but that's, you know what, it's a fair trade.
Oh, wow.
I have no formal artistic training.
Yeah, but I do have formal writing training, and I have to go upstairs
yes, you do.
And get to it. But
all right, buddy. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Yes, we will.
All right, thanks.
Take care.
Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly. We'll take another break here. We're going to come back and continue with some of your emails. Webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. Facebook chat is up and running as well. We're clicking on all cylinders today. So all forms of media, you can get a hold of us today. Your thought on the crowds and the sound at Gillette certainly are welcome. Your thoughts on actually what the Patriots should do now that Lawrence Maroney is a Denver Bronco. Any thoughts as to how they should address the running back situation? If not now, perhaps in the future. I will allow that as well. And yes, as Brooklyn Matt suggested, get up off your J-E-T-S, Jets, 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 rear ends, and let's get some of your thoughts on the football game, shall we? Hour number two, in the playbook, coming up.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program.
Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook.
Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com. Radio.
Hey, don't go yet, sir.
But the light turned green.
Well, you don't go till I say so. You play by my rules.
My rules?
Ball start, loss of 5 yards, still first down.
What are you talking about?
Unsportsmanlike conduct, 10 yards.
Unsportsmanlike is 15 yards.
Move the chains!
You are a crossing guard.
Personal foul, 15 yards.
And stop blowing that whistle.
Think football? Bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warm-ups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Delay of game,
but,
5 yards,
but
first down.
But you're not...
Keep the change, patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services NA, Bank of America NA, member PIC, copyright 2009, Bank of America Corporation.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines Flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Hey, Brian, it's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay, Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. You want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on the New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together, talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
Hour number two inside Patriots Playbook.
Can you put the shoes?
.com radio. I'm John Rook. Thanks to Eric Scalavino for chipping in the opening hour of the program, as he normally does on Wednesdays and Thursdays. He'll be back in the Playbook tomorrow. Tomorrow's show, in fact, will also feature Russell Baxter from ESPN in hour number two. Coming up in approximately 20 minutes, Dan Leverfeld from Jets Confidential. Bob Wischusen, Jets radio play-by-play announcer, also scheduled to be with us in the second half of the hour. In the meantime, we still have plenty of time for your emails, your Facebook chats, your calls. 508-543-7482 is the number. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. Let's continue with some of the thought process here that we've had from dating back into the PFW show, with some of the issues about the crowd and the noise and all that kind of stuff that took place on Sunday against the Bengals. This one comes from Tracy. Is that right? Yeah, Tracy in Vegas. There's a problem with people arriving too late or leaving too early. Could Patriot Place offer a reason to come early or stay after? Free parking to the first 50 cars, discounts at shops during particular times. I've never been there, so if they already do, please disregard. Well, actually, they do. I mean, first of all, Patriot Place is like, you know, you've got like what? How many shops and stores do they have? Like 50? It's like an outdoor strip mall. I mean, it's bigger than that. It's a whole shopping type thing that they got going on. You know, they got the movie theaters there. I mean, not that you should necessarily need that, because Patriots fans have certainly been some of the best tailgaters there are, and you've got a reason to, you know, to tailgate, and that probably adds to some of it. But you know, Patriot Place has a lot of restaurants and a lot of things to be doing before and or after games. The other thing that really kind of I found kind of curious is that I guess typically the hall at Patriot Place is not open on game days. Now, I didn't know that. Traditionally, though, you know, the Patriots Hall of Fame isn't open on game days, and I find that curious, and I wonder why that is. Is it because of security issues, not enough personnel, they're trying to get people back? I don't understand what that's all about, to be honest with you. But it was my impression that it was open, and I was actually going to tell my son and his date to go there this last weekend for the game, and then I was told, well, it's not open. And then I heard that the Patriots actually had it open from 4 until 7 p.m., and that was a special deal. So I guess traditionally it's not open, and to me that would be one of the best reasons to stick around, is to go to the hall. I'm not sure why that occurs that way. Perhaps that's something that we can actually get an answer to at some point. But to Tracy, to answer your question, yeah, Patriot Place offers plenty of reasons. So I'm not sure, you know, the issue happens to be in the stadium, not just coming to the game itself. They have never had a problem getting people to come to the game. I mean, they've got a 180-game or something sellout streak dating back to the time that the Crafts first bought the team back in the early 90s. So they've never had, they still got a 50,000 person waiting list for season tickets. So getting people to come is not the problem. Getting people to be loud and engaged in the actual game itself is becoming the problem. People don't want to be involved. People want a cocktail. You know, they want to be in the club. They want to eat. They want to drink. They want to get their bang for their buck. You know, they want to schmooze. They want to show people, hey, look at me. I'm sitting in the fat cat seats. They don't care about the game as much anymore. That's just a fact of life. And if that means that we've become some of the corporate fat cats that we loathed for all those years when all these new stadiums started to be built before, you know, Gillette Stadium came into existence, it makes us just like them then, doesn't it?
John, as I look at the hours of operation for the hall,
mm-hmm.
I think it says 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. on Sunday.
Right, but on game days, it's not open.
Oh, that's weird.
Which sounds to me, it has to be.
I was under the impression that it was, but you needed a game ticket to get in there or something like that.
Okay, well, yeah, but that's still a reason, I guess, to get people to come there and stay there.
Yeah.
I mean, I was told that, you know, it was open from 4 to 7 this past weekend, post-game, after the Patriots game was over, and that was and that's a rarity, that it's not normally open after Patriot games. And I'm like, well, why? That seems to me to be the best reason to keep people around.
It says closed on the day of all Patriots home games, at which time it is utilized for private functions.
Well, then there you go. So they utilize it for private functions.
The last,
admissions
are 1 hour before the close.
Yeah, and once again, the corporate fat cats win, don't they?
Yep.
That's exactly what happens. So they close it down on game day so they can take care of, you know, the corporate fat cats who are going to sit on their hands. And so those corporate fat cats can also tell the Patriots fans who give a darn about the game to sit down. You're in my way. That's basically what they're doing.
That's if they even show up to the game.
That's right.
That's which right. is the other thing that kills
you. See, that's not right. They just shouldn't do that.
No. Nope.
They should make, you know, at the very least what they should do is they should have it open post-game after every home game for 3 hours. It's going to take you that long to get out of the damn parking lot.
I'll tell you,
anyway.
Too, John, what a great take it is to actually – I don't know if you had a chance to go in the hall yet, but it is
– Oh, yeah, I've been in there.
It's a fantastic take, and that feature film that they show on the top
level. It's fantastic.
Level,
yeah, it's great.
It's great.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Really gives you a sense of the history of the last 50 years of this organization and how it's evolved.
It's definitely worth your while. You know, and I think season ticket holders even have, you know, a special ticket in their season ticket
package
to allow
admission.
Them to get in for free.
Yeah, absolutely. You're exactly right.
So, you know, I mean, it's a no-brainer. You should go to it. But they should open it up post-game. I mean, if you're going to use it pre-game for fat cat stuff, then they should open up post-game to everybody else. You know, that's kind of off the track, but that's what I think.
Because it would be a great solution to the traffic issues. I mean, if you want to avoid that, you know, first surge, you know, take your kids, go in there, spend an hour or two. It's a great
right.
take.
Right.
And it kind of lets some of the traffic funnel out before you get in the line.
Mm-hmm. No question. James in Pittsburgh says, will Edelman be playing this Sunday, Cashier or Wheatley? Well, Cashier probably not, even though the Patriots do hope that he will be back at some point in time this season. Otherwise, they would have put him on IR already. Wheatley, Eric mentioned earlier in the show, you know, he's still getting around, but he's in a boot. He's in a walking cast. So it doesn't appear to be any time in the near future. Edelman. Everybody was on the field today, so Edelman obviously is closer.
He's got the best chance, I would say.
Yeah, out of those three, he's closer to being back probably than the others.
And people are forgetting that the Patriots' offense looked the way it did without Julian Edelman last week, which I don't think should go overlooked because I think once it's all said and done this season, he's going to be a pretty valued member of this offense.
He has, continued to make strides being sort of a Wes Welker light.
Yeah.
But I also think that Aaron Hernandez can play that kind of role as well.
Oh, absolutely.
If not being an out-and-out.
How explosive was he on that screen?
Wide receiver.
It was unbelievable. Yeah. To see him cut back like that, he looked just like a wide receiver.
He's going to end up being a wide receiver. I mean, I just kind of how I think he'll.
And I mean, I think you'll start seeing, you know, the Patriots of old with Charlie Weiss throwing those wide receiver screens. You're going to see a couple of those to Aaron Hernandez.
Right.
So.
Yeah, most definitely. Sterling sends this one. Let's see. Says, first and foremost, shout out to King Eric and the Red Scalavino. Well, King Eric, the Red Scalavino, for getting it wrong once again. Pats win. Oh, we should have had this one for Eric when he was still here. Because Eric also did not pick the Patriots last week. Although I didn't either. You know, I have to perform my mea culpa here. I had the Bengals, so I'm 0-1 this year. Moving on, somebody has to put a muzzle on this Nimrod at ESPN Radio named Colin Coward. He thinks that Sanchez and the Jets' shortcoming is due to Santana Moss being out and that it's only week one. He tried to compensate Sanchez's poor performance to Matt Ryan's and Joe Flacco in week one. But against the Patriots, he thinks Sanchez will embarrass the Pats because of a young secondary and no pass rush. So watch out for Sanchez in week two. He quotes, "You will see a different team come Sunday, and Sanchez will dissect the secondary." He also said Welker will be stopped because at some point when the Pats offense lines up, Moss might move in. Revis will cover the slot and stop Welker. Cromartie will blanket Moss, according to him. He says, "Can you respond to this nonsense, please? I can't imagine Brady and Belichick being that dumb to where the scenario Coward is assuming can take place. But now Rex Ryan is saying we'll be okay when Santonio Holmes comes back." Okay. Well, can we get it? Which one? Let's see. Should we get it right here first? Which one actually plays for the New York Jets? I'll take, let's see. Who can I take? I think I'll take, I'm looking at my my list of availables here. Yes, Santonio Holmes for 20, Alex, please. And the answer is, no, I, you know, okay, understood. I don't know. Well, first of all, you have to understand, guys like Colin Cowherd at ESPN Radio do what they do just to get a rise out of you, and clearly that one worked. You know, part of the Jets' shortcoming is, you know, that they've had some injuries at receiver. I think we can all understand that. I'm a little confused, and maybe we can shed some light on this when we get into it in the next hour. What was the reason? And Kevin, maybe you can even answer this. Why did the Jets not look at Braylon Edwards at all, basically, in that game on Monday?
I don't know. I think a lot of it had to do with, to be honest, Mark Sanchez looked awful to me. I don't know. He just, I don't think it mattered who he was throwing to, whether it was Braylon or any of the other guys. If I was a Jets fan, I wouldn't have much confidence in him in this game on Sunday going forward.
Hmm. Well,
But you're right. I mean, it's hard to look at him. He at one point in my mind, like, he was, you know, a Pro Bowl type wide receiver, but I don't think you can view him in that light at this stage of his career.
No, I don't think so. I also believe that, you know, having Cromartie blanketing Moss and Revis covering the slot to stop Welker, I don't think that'll – I don't. You know, might they switch coverages just to confuse? Maybe, but that won't last very long.
The Jets defense looked good the other night. I think we can both agree on that.
Sure, yeah.
But I think Baltimore shot themselves in the foot just like the Jets did on offense.
Well, and three turnovers in the first half.
Yeah, I mean, so they attributed to making the Jets' defense look better than it probably was, I think. That's just one man's opinion.
Yeah, I'd go along with that. Well, I guess you just got to rise
and
out
I,
of
And I think, John, if you were looking at who you'd like to take for one game,
yeah,
I think I would take the Patriots receiving core over the Jets at this stage right now.
Right now? Yeah, I would agree with that.
I mean, once Santonio Holmes gets back in the fold after, what is it, week four? I think he's suspended for 4 weeks.
Like that's what it is, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, once he's added to that mix, we might have to reevaluate the situation. But
So, clearly he meant Holmes over Santana Moss, I suppose.
Yeah.
All right, here we're. Oh, Gene in Daytona Beach. John, you've already have an excellent running back on the roster. I think he's talking about Javaris James. I've been watching him his whole career. He's an overachiever, what we need, and he is hungry. If it were not for injuries last year, he would have been a draft pick. Do not underestimate him. Well, they're obviously going to give him a chance, Gene. I don't know how soon it'll come around, but he's going to have his opportunity as soon as there's an opening on the roster. John says, "Guys, first time writing in. I hope we pick up a nice running back in the draft as well. I think we could get DeMarco Murray in the second round. He's had some injuries, but he's very versatile out of the backfield as well as between the tackles. Good speed, moves, etc. Not a power runner, short yardage thumper, but does all the rest very well. What are your thoughts on him?" Does he really want me to tell him what I really think of DeMarco Murray? You know where he goes to school, right, Kev? I guess not. I'm kind of joshing here only because DeMarco Murray goes to Oklahoma. I haven't really considered players from Oklahoma since I'm a Texas grad myself. But strippers will be happy to know that I actually like DeMarco Murray, strippers being a frequenter for PFW and an OU fan and a bridged OU fan. The problem is that he's had a lot of injuries, not just some. He was injured most of last year. He did run for, what was it, two Bills plus in the opener against Utah State in a game that, you know, Oklahoma barely won. The team performed much better last week in their win over Florida State, but was able to do that largely because Florida State's defense is just god-awful still. So it really wasn't so much due to what DeMarco Murray did as it was that Florida State's defense was just terrible. Murray has miscibility, as I like to call it. He's got good breakaway speed. He's got enough power. Could he potentially be a second rounder? Possibly. Might even find a way to work himself into the first round if he continues to have a good year and Oklahoma has a good year. But I think here's a guy that certainly seems to have some ability. Beyond what I've seen in the couple of games that I've seen him, and again, largely because he's been hurt, your guess is as good as mine. But Murray is another name I think that we can probably, you know, continue to follow, as I think you should follow a guy like John Clay out of Wisconsin. Let's see, what else we have? A couple of others here. Let's go with Keith. John, yesterday you were asking for advice for Logan Mankins about apologizing. This is a late offering because I listened to the show on the podcast earlier today, but I hope it might be interesting anyway. By all means, Keith, fire away. All right, he says, before we married, the relationship between my girlfriend and I could be stormy, and on one occasion, we were having a real ding-dong but argument in one room of her parents' house, making lots of noise. I don't know why she made a fuss. She accused me of loving my matchless motorcycle more than her, which I did, so I agreed with her. The racket made her father come to find out what all the row was about. His appearance killed the argument instantly, but when he insisted that we tell him what had set the whole thing off, I got all stuffy. I was 18, after all. And I told him very politely that it wasn't any of his business. It was between Ruth and me. He took that badly, as I would have done in his place, and after he left the room, we decamped to my parents' house to kiss and make up. Her father, though, was the managing director and joint owner of a small chain of department stores while I was still at school and very, very wet behind the ears. Yet he came around to my parents' house shortly afterwards and apologized to me, agreeing that it hadn't been any of his business, but pointing out that he had Ruth's best interests at heart. I apologized for being uppity, and we shook hands, agreeing that it had been, as we say, six of one, half dozen of the other. I'm sure that you won't be surprised that I thought the world of him after that, and oh, we'll have been married for 40 years come next May. Well, thank you for sharing the story. Keith then says, on a more topical note, what about the departure of Slow-Mo to Denver? He's not been a good investment for New England, but I suppose getting anything for him is better than nothing under the circumstances. Was it all down to him or to bad coaching, I wonder? He could do the job, as he showed on too few occasions, but never did it consistently. If he'd had that inane talent, why couldn't the coaches bring it out? Why did he dance at the line time after time? Shouldn't a good coach be able to knock that out of a player? Interesting to hear your thoughts. Thank you, Keith from Derby, UK. It's a good point. And I've kind of wondered this as well, Keith, that quite frankly, we've seen players like Maroney have talent. We've seen the coaches instruct. I personally, as well as all the guys in the PFW, have seen the coaches instruct, this is the way you do it, and yet he doesn't do it. Again, it's the old adage, you lead the horse to water, but you can't make him bend his head over and drink the stuff. Somehow it just doesn't compute. It doesn't get through. Old habits are hard to die, I suppose, maybe another way to put it. And finally, the Patriots just finally said, you know what, we've seen enough. Enough is enough. We're cutting our losses, even if he was a first-round draft pick, and we're moving on. They got a number 4 in return for him, plus they had to give up a 6 in addition. But basically, they got a 4th-round pick. Now, again, there will be some savvy people that would recognize, well, the Patriots got Randy Moss for a 4th. Well, that's true. I'm not comparing Lawrence Maroney to Randy Moss, but I'm just saying that, you know, I think that's probably the best value you're going to get for a player who clearly had not done what he was expected to do. And everybody, including the Broncos, knows it. And, you know, especially when you're in the fifth year of a deal and you've largely underachieved, you've got, you know, 2,500 or something career yards rushing. But you accomplished that in 4 years when you should have accomplished it in two, half the time. And, yeah, injuries have certainly played a part of that. It was just time to cut bait. A good coach should be able to kind of knock that out of a player, as you say, Keith. But I think the Patriots tried to do that. I'm not willing to lay this one on the coaching staff. Sometimes you just have to say, you know, a player just can't compute. And in this regard, Lawrence Maroney could not or would not do what the coaches asked of him to do, period.
However, John, I have a funny little aside for you on this matter. The Patriots were so nice that they were they sent Doc to accompany Lawrence Maroney to Denver last night.
Well, actually, Doc texted me.
He texted me as well,
and he was on his way, you know, to Denver, you know, to visit his wife who's out in Colorado. And it just so happened he was on the same flight as Lawrence Maroney last night.
Isn't that nice? The Patriots gave him a chaperone.
Yeah. Well. Not entirely the case, but yes, it seemed like it, didn't it? And Doc even texted me to say that Lawrence was shocked. He genuinely seemed shocked.
Yeah.
You know, that he was being traded.
I think I was pretty surprised just at, you know, the timing of it, of when it came down.
Well, yeah, I think that's why a lot of people were curious about it. Well, why now? Especially when, you know, you might still have issues. It's early in the year. And I think, well, it just came to the point of, well, why not now?
And I think there was, looking back on it, there could be a little suspicion drawn from Sunday, you know, about, you know, he's listed as injured and out for the game. And as well, like, he wasn't even in sweats on the sideline for a home game with his team. Right. So, you know, there could have been a little suspicion raised by those things if you were astute enough to observe that from the bench.
George in South Carolina. Here's my opinion on the running back situation. It comes down to what your bread and butter is, and right now it's the passing game with Brady. I think the Patriots would rather find another Kevin Falk who can be effective on screens, draws, and pass protection while being okay at running from under center formations rather than a traditional running back. Well, it might be that they've just kind of had to go that route because that's all they really have. I don't necessarily think that they prefer that one way or the other. I think if you're a good running back, then they'll take you, regardless of what your intrinsic talents might be. Let's see. This one actually has to come from the UK, doesn't it? Jack, music for the stadium? How about Kiss, War Machine? Big booming drums that will get people fired up. Graphics, every time the opposing team is on offense, show the pick of the helmet catch. You'll hear noise. That actually might do it. That's probably the best suggestion we've had all day. Or we could take a page from the Colts and record the crowd noise and pipe it in. That's also good. The soccer chant won't work, however. Ole, 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 ole. No, that's not going to work. But funny, anyway. All right. And then we talk about making noise. Let's start with us now. Let's talk Jets. Let's talk Rex. Let's talk how we're going to beat them. Let's fire it up. Okay. All right. I kind of tend to agree, John. All right, let's do that. We can do that. All right, let's pause here for a break. Then we're going to come back and get more into the into the actual Jets. Dan Leberfeld from Jets Confidential is going to join us in approximately 5 minutes. Then hopefully thereafter, before the top of the hour, we'll get to Bob Wischusen, who's the voice of the New York Jets on the radio. And we've got some news and notes from the Jets to pass along coming up right here inside the Playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
We're pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com radio.
Hey, don't go yet, sir.
But the light turned green.
Well, you don't go till I say so. You play by my rules. My rules.
Ball start, loss of 5 yards, still first down.
What are you talking about?
Unsportsmanlike conduct, 10 yards.
Unsportsmanlike is 15 yards.
Move the chains.
You are a crossing guard.
Personal foul, 15 yards.
And stop blowing that whistle.
Think football? Bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warm-ups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Delay of game,
but,
5 yards,
but
first down.
But you're not...
Keep the Change patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services N.A. Bank of America N.A. Member PIC. Copyright 2009. Bank of America Corporation.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines Flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Hey, Brian, it's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay. Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. You want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on a New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together, talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery at masslottery.com.
John Rook back at the playbook as we're getting on the short side here of our program for a Wednesday. We'll get to some more Jets details coming up here in just a little bit as well. The Jets today, by the way, did, in case you hadn't heard, tried to fill the void, or the large void left by the loss of nose tackle Chris Jenkins. They agreed to a contract with defensive tackle Howard Green. League source told ESPN's Adam Schefter the Green's deals for 2 years. Jenkins, of course, is going to be out for the rest of the year after tearing the ACL in his surgically repaired left knee, the same one that he went out with last year. And he did that against Baltimore on Monday night. So, Green appeared in 12 games for the Jets last season, 16 total tackles. He signed with Washington this offseason, but then was cut right before the year began. And so now basically it's back to the future for the New York Jets as they put Howard Green back on the roster to replace Chris Jenkins. Jenkins was hurt. You had Sean Ellis, Mike DeVito, Sione Pua, and Vernon Golston. And Golston, as you might recall, is a former first-round draft pick out of Ohio State. He's really a converted linebacker. So really they only had three linemen before signing Howard Green. It's not a lot of depth there on the defensive line for the Jets. They have, I guess, Matt Kruel, Marcus Dixon on the bench. They lost Ropati Patoatua to an Achilles tendon, season-ending injury in the offseason. Looking at the Jets and their two deep, Kruel and Dixon were backing up Jenkins, but obviously now that position is going to be manned most of the time by Howard Green, signed today. Pua at right end with DeVito backing him up. Sean Ellis has Vernon Golston backing him up in their front three. Linebackers, you've got Scott and Harris in the middle. You've got Calvin Pace on the outside with Brian Thomas. Jason Taylor is technically backing up Calvin Pace at one of the outside linebackers, although Taylor's one of those guys that could play down defensive end if necessary. So I'm sure, and I think I saw him lining up on the outside, you know, on the line of scrimmage as well, on at least a couple of occasions against Baltimore on Monday night. So it would seem that, you know, Taylor could also ostensibly fill that role in body, if not ability, alone. So that's where, you know, that's really where the Jets are in terms of their personnel on the defensive side of the ball following Chris Jenkins' injury on Monday night. You know, it might very well be a career-threatening thing, but I guess it's obviously still a little bit early to really sort of discuss
that. Still
that.
Seems to be the consensus, John, that it is a career-ending injury.
Well, that's a shame. Nobody really wants to see that.
I heard several members of the New York media on our local stations this morning doing guest appearances saying that they expected it to end his career.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, especially when something is relatively, you know, fragile in its health, and you re-hurt the same thing, and it's the same injury, which leads me to believe that you know, ligament that was repaired, it's going to stand. It's going to be a lot tougher for it to repair itself again. So that's what leads you to think that it could be a career-threatening injury. And that's unfortunate. No matter what you think about the Jets, that's unfortunate. Fact of the matter is that really, and this is mentioned earlier in the show, the Jets' defense played pretty well on Monday night. You might even say that they played very well. The problem was is they were on the field for so darn long. They were on the field for 38 minutes, 38 and a half minutes in the game on Monday night. That's tough. You can't ask a defense to be on the field for that long. You can't, you know, a team to have that kind of ball control advantage over you. I don't care if you've got the best defense of the league, which the Jets certainly have one of the, but if you have that, you're not performing as well as you probably need to be performing. The other thing that really hurt the Jets, in addition to the defense being on the field so long, is the fact that, you know, they made way too many mistakes. I mean, 14 penalties for 125 yards. Teams that are good aren't going to let you win when you shoot yourself in the foot like that. Jets had opportunities. They had opportunities, especially with the three Baltimore turnovers early. Dan Leberfeld covers the Jets for Jets Confidential. He joins us here inside the playbook. Dan, what do you think about that? Did you think that the penalties were as much to reason as anything else for the Jets' inadequacies on offense the other night?
Yeah, the penalties obviously were a big part of it, and also the passing game was really, really bad. So I think those two elements were a big problem, and I think you know, when you look at the Jets and how undisciplined they were and the lack of focus, and you compare it to New England and the way the Patriots came out, storming out of the gate and getting that big lead against Cincinnati, it shows you what focus can do for a team. The Jets had all those distractions in the summer, and the Patriots are the poster children for being focused. Look at the two results in week one.
Yeah, I felt as if they were just kind of getting ready to break out a little bit, and all of a sudden they would do something to kind of shoot themselves in the foot. Maybe you can speak to this a little bit, because I guess maybe I missed something. Why did the Jets in their offensive game plan not seem to find or go the direction of Braylon Edwards?
Well, they did throw to him. He only had the one catch at the end for 9 yards, but he did, I believe, get four or five passes thrown to him. It just didn't work out. It is very surprising, because when you look at the Baltimore Ravens secondary, they had two starters out, including a future Hall of Famer in Ray Lewis. And so for the Jets to throw for 70-something yards against the secondary with Ed Reed out and Ladarius Webb, supposed to be a starter at corner, he was out, and they could not throw the football. I think here's what the problem was. Going into the game, Rex Ryan really stressed to Mark, you know, this is a team you can't commit turnovers against. They have one of those incredible records, you know, when they win the turnover battle. So with that being said, and also LaDainian Tomlinson all summer, Mark was being taught, you have LaDainian Tomlinson as an option. You could dump it to him whenever there's nobody open. I think he went to that well too many times thinking, you know, I don't see anybody open. I'll dump it to LaDainian. So he was taking no chances to someone like Braylon, and also I think he was petrified to commit a turnover. So I think the coaches deserve some blame on this one as far as what they were pounding into his head.
Yeah, I just got the sense that he just wasn't willing to try to go upfield. It was almost as if Edwards didn't even exist out there.
Yeah, and then they also made a personnel mistake, and they rectified it this week. They released a David Clowney, who was a guy with world-class speed. They released him at the cut to 53. Actually, it was a couple days after that. And they really didn't have anyone to stretch the field last week, so that kind of allowed the Baltimore Ravens to, you know, double-cover Braylon and play an eighth man in the box and do whatever they wanted because they didn't have to honor the deep ball. David Clowney was re-signed yesterday, and you could see, you know, watching practice what his speed can do for the Jets because he can absolutely fly. I'm not saying he's the greatest receiver in the world, but he has to be honored going deep. So I think having him back should open the field up a little bit.
You feel like he's a candidate to be activated for Sunday?
Well, I think he'll absolutely be activated because I think Brad Smith does so many things for this team. You know, he's a kick returner. He's the Wildcat quarterback. He's also a very good kick and punt cover guy. He's not a number three receiver, and he was playing the number three spot last week, and it's just not his thing. He's not, he doesn't get a lot of separation as a route runner, so I think he goes back to the number four spot. I think Clowney is actually the third receiver this week and does see action.
What has the mood around the team been like? I mean, with all the big build up to the season, you know, the whole Hard Knock story on HBO, a lot of expectation here, and then to come out and basically lay an egg like that on Monday night, how has the team reacted in the 2 days since?
Well, I think that they were very down, but I think, you know, watching the practice, it was very spirited today, and Mark Sanchez kept talking in the locker room during the media session about the 24-hour rule that, you know, at 7 o'clock, or 10 o'clock last night, Tuesday night, you know, 24 hours after the game, the other game was out of his head and he was moving on. And I think that's kind of the way they're approaching it. I think in, you know, from a silver lining standpoint, Jets played a very good team, had all those penalties, had the turnovers, didn't throw the ball very well and lost 10-9. So, you know, the Ravens are going to be a team that is going to be in the mix, you know, for the playoffs all year and they're Super Bowl contenders. So to play as poorly as the Jets did, and still have a final score like 10-9, I think that they feel, hey, you know, we lost, but, you know, if we correct a few things, we could get this thing going in the right direction.
Dan Lieberfeld, Jets Confidential, joining us here inside Patriots Playbook. Dan, let me see if I've got this right. The Jets, back in 81, started the year 0-3, and they ended up making the playoffs. In 82, they ended up losing the home opener, I believe, to Miami, and then went on to the AFC Championship game. They opened 85 with a shutout loss to the Raiders. They got into the playoffs. They were 0-2 in 98, got to 12-4, and seemed to be on their way to the Super Bowl that year. They fell to Peyton Manning and the Colts at the start of 01, made the playoffs. 1-4 in 02. I mean, I guess what I'm driving at here is that, yes, they lost an opener, but I think this team probably still feels relatively confident in its ability to get back to an AFC Championship game. Is that a correct assessment?
Yeah, I think so. I think the two things you really, really need to do in this league if you want to win, and it's not rocket science for me to point out, is run the football and stop the run. They did an incredible job against Baltimore stopping the run. You can just look at the stats. The Jets dominated against the run. The running game, actually, for the Jets, even though they don't have gaudy numbers, it was pretty good. They averaged like 5 yards a carry, but the big problem was the time of possession against Baltimore. The Ravens were about 39 minutes as far as holding the football. The Jets were around 21, so they didn't have enough carries. But this is a team that can run the football with Sean Green and Tomlinson, and they can stop the run. And I think if you can do those two things, you're going to be a contender to make the playoffs at the very least.
Well, what's the obvious then thing in terms of Chris Jenkins' loss and stopping the run? How much does it hurt this team, if at all?
Well, I think when you look at the team last year, he got hurt early in the year, blew his knee out early last year, and they were number one in the league in defense. So I don't want to say anything bad about him because he's a heck of a football player, but their backup nose tackle, to me, the way he plays, he had 7 tackles in the game against Baltimore. Sione Bulha is a guy that, to me, looks like a borderline Pro Bowler. Last year and then the first game this year, this is a guy that gets no attention, but he's a tremendous run stuffer. He plays with a very low center of gravity, and he's a very, very underrated player. So I don't think that they're going to take a big step back with the Jenkins loss, and today they re-signed a guy that New England knows, actually half the league knows because he's been on half the teams in the league. Howard Green was brought back, and he's a very good backup nose tackle. Not a starter, but a guy that can come in for a few plays. He's got the size for it, you know, that 6'2", 320, and he knows what he's doing out there. So he's back. So I think that they're not going to have major issues at that position.
You know, one position that they certainly don't have an issue with at all is at corner with Darrell Revis. And obviously there's a little bit of talk going back and forth between Revis and now Randy Moss as well. You fully expect Darrell Revis and Randy Moss to man up against each other on Sunday? And is that one of the battles you're looking forward to watching the most?
Yeah, that's obviously a tremendous matchup, and it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. And Rex Ryan admitted after the Baltimore game that he made a mistake, and his defensive staff made a big mistake not putting Revis on Bolden the whole game. Revis just stayed on the left side. He didn't follow around the other team's best receiver. Maybe they thought with Luis Gonzalo there also and Derek Mason, there wasn't a clear-cut number one receiver. New England has two number one receivers pretty much. And so I think that Revis will be guarding Randy Moss. But the Jets' bigger problem, Wes Walker destroyed him in one of those games last year. I think he had 15 catches. And it remains to be seen what Kyle Wilson can do in his second pro game against one of the greatest slot receivers of all time. So that's the bigger challenge. Not that Randy Moss isn't a tremendous player, but he'll have some catches on Revis, and he should be fully motivated. Obviously, what Revis said about him was way out of line last year, the word he used to describe him. So Randy Moss will do some things. But the bigger challenge, and that's no slight on Randy Moss, is Wes Walker, who has repeatedly, destroyed the Jets as far as that they can't handle him. They don't have an answer for him.
Who do you feel like will probably get the time on Welker?
Well, I think if I were to make a decision, if I were the coach, and I'm not, it would be a guy named Marquise Cole, but they're not going to do that. I think it's going to be Kyle Wilson. Rex Ryan said today it's going to be different people, but I think when they took Kyle Wilson, to me, Wes Welker was on their mind because they had no answer for him last year. And if you're going to be in the division in New England, you can play them twice. You know, you obviously need to figure out a guy who's best suited to cover Wes Welker. This is a first-round pick out of Boise State. He's got tremendous speed and quickness. He's got the skill set to run around Wes Welker, but stopping him is easier said than done. You know, there are a lot of guys that tried who we thought could do it and failed. We'll see what Wilson can do. Physically, he's got the ability, but Welker is so crafty and it's such a great route runner. For a second, for a guy playing the second game, that's quite an assignment.
Sure. Couple of other quick questions. Number one, how has LaDainian Tomlinson basically fit into the overall Jets scheme in terms of not only on-field, but off-field locker room surroundings?
Well, you know, when you see him in the locker room, you don't see him necessarily mixing with a lot of players. That doesn't mean they don't like him and there's no bond there, but he's still kind of new here. He just had a baby, so, you know, that's a big focus of his. But I think that on the field, he's a perfect fit here because they needed a guy to platoon with Sean Green. Sean Green is not a very good receiver. LT's one of the greatest receiving backs of all time. So I think that he comes in, not only can he run the football, you know, and here's the thing about him is the quickness is still there. He's making the first guy miss. People wondered if he'd do that at this stage of his career. And he had a long run against Baltimore where he broke a tackle with Terrell Suggs in the middle of the run. So he's breaking tackles. He's making the first man miss. From a football standpoint, it looks like the Jets have a major steal here because I think the assumption around the football world was this guy was on the wrong side of the mountain. But to me, he looks like almost the same old LT. And I think that he's been a tremendous addition. And I think that the receiving out of the backfield is just as important as the running because after the injury to Leon Washington last year, they did not throw the backs, and with this guy around, they're going to throw the backs a lot this year.
With Thomas Jones having departed in the offseason, is Sean Green the guy for the long term?
Well, he is, but right now he's got to figure out how to stop fumbling. He had one fumble in the game that they lost, and he had another fumble that he was fortunate that he fumbled out of bounds, and the play was dead. So fumbling continues to be an issue for him. He had some issues with fumbling last year, so he's kind of going through that Adrian Peterson mode where he's trying to figure out how do I cut down on this. And probably easier to do that in the off season with, you know, 3 or 4 months of drills, but right now he's working on it. We'll see how it works out because, you know, New England's going to go after that football with his tendency to cough it up.
Sure, absolutely. What are the new reviews on the new Meadowlands?
Yeah, I tell you what, it's enormous. You know, it's twice the size of the old stadium in terms of the whole size of the stadium. That's not necessarily just the field and the stands. The concourses are counted as well, but it's just an enormous facility. You know, they've had some struggles selling tickets, and one thing you did hear last week, because Baltimore is only 3 hours from the New Meadowlands, you heard a lot of cheering for Todd Heap after his catches. You could clearly hear the Heap chant. So it's one of those stadiums where they have a ton of their own fans, but it's one of those places where a lot of opposing fans are getting tickets. So there's kind of a mixed din in the crowd. But it's definitely a spectacular facility. The four scoreboards in the corner, the HD scoreboards, are, you know, as cutting edge as you'll find anywhere.
You know, I think there'll be a lot of people that'll be looking forward to seeing that. Are there ever any issues in sharing the same digs with the Giants?
Well, I think it used to bother the Jets a lot more, but this stadium is definitely more neutral than the old stadium. The seats are not blue and red like the old stadium
right. That
was built originally for the Giants. And what they did was on the outside, and you'll probably see this later in the game because it's a 4:15 game, they light up the stadium on the outside with the color of the home team. So the Jet home game, the whole outside's lit up in green, and when the Giants play, it's lit up in blue. So when the Jets play there, you know, they have their own Wall of Fame, and they have the coloring, as I mentioned, on the outside. So it's more of a home field for them than the old stadium was.
Interesting. I guess the final question I have for you, Dan, is concerning, you know, all of the hype over the summer, and obviously you had the HBO cameras and, you know, everything around for the entire training camp with the Hard Knocks series that was going on. Do the Jets themselves, players, coaches, administrators, ownership, and even media, let's include yourself on this, do you feel like, when all is said and done, that is a positive for this team and trying to portray it in the light that they want? Or was that even a factor in allowing the cameras in to get an inside look?
No, the only positive thing that come out of a show like Hard Knocks is, you know, a team trying to help themselves on the marketing end of things. You know, this is a team that is trying to sell PSLs and tickets. So being on HBO, such a popular channel, each week for 5 weeks, from a marketing standpoint, that was probably very good for them. From a distraction standpoint, to me, it was a major distraction. And I mean, look how they came out of the gate. I mentioned that earlier in this interview. To me, they're like the anti-Patriots. They have too many things going on off the field, and it definitely took away from their focus in the opener. I think they'll be a lot more focused this week, realizing that they weren't focused for the opener. But not, from a football standpoint, I think it was a negative. From a marketing standpoint, I think it was a positive.
Interesting. All right, Dan Lieberfeld from Jets Confidential. Dan, thanks for spending a little time with us. Thanks for juggling your schedule, because I know you had some duties there that you had to take care of. We certainly appreciate the time today.
Okay, John, anytime.
You got it. We'll talk again, I'm sure, before the year is out. That's Dan Lieberfeld again from Jets Confidential. Because we're right up on the top of the hour, and Shop Talk is coming up next here on Patriots.com Radio, we'll get Bob Wischusen from the Jets Radio Network on, hopefully, for tomorrow's program. And speaking of Shop Talk, Tracy, Jeff, and Jim are in the house. Guys, how are we doing today?
We're doing fine, thank you.
What are we talking about today?
Well, Mike Perriello couldn't make it today, so we've brought in Tracy Sormani from the cheerleaders, so we're going to have some cheerleader talk today.
Yeah, all right. Well, Tracy can certainly handle that. Tracy, I think, is close to being there for as long, if not longer, than me around Gillette Stadium. So
we were talking about that earlier today, so we'll have to expound on that.
I don't like how that sounds.
Tracy, it doesn't mean anything negative.
Okay.
It just means that you've got great experience.
That. Okay, easy.
You're still looking good.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. All right, that's coming up here in just a couple of moments with Shop Talk. Our thanks again to Dan Lieberfeld from Jets Confidential. Obviously, Eric Scalavino from PFW in the opening hour of the program. And thanks to you for all the emails. You keep contributing, and that's fantastic as we get ready to really kick the season into high gear. It's week two. It's Jets week. And yes, the team has to go on the road. We'll get the Jets again later this season. But as a couple of callers and a couple of emailers suggested, it's now time to kind of get the old fire stoked up a little bit and realize that, hey, this is what it's all about. The Jets believe this is their division to win. The Jets believe that they are the anointed ones now. that they are the ones, since they got to the AFC Championship game last year, that they are the ones that people should be looking to shoot after. And, of course, it's the Patriots that are the defending AFC East champions. How soon the Jets forget that. And, yes, you've got Darrelle Revis beginning to say some things, and he's called Randy Moss a bit of a slouch at receiver. And Randy sort of answered that attack yesterday and when he made his appearance on SportsCenter. And so now the war of the words begins. You know, let's see how Rex Ryan treats the rest of this week. Let's see how someone like Bill Belichick or Tom Brady treat the rest of this week for the Patriots. It's all in the anticipation. It's all in the buildup. You can't get to a crescendo without starting, you know, a little bit below the surface and then building. And that's what we've been trying to do throughout the day today. Tomorrow, we really dial it up a notch. You can guarantee that. Your emails, your phone calls, your Facebook chats will be welcome. Same Pat's time, same Pat's channel tomorrow. We'll also have Russell Baxter from ESPN to not only look at Pat's and Jets, but also the rest of week two around the National Football League, all coming up in the playbook tomorrow. Thanks to Kevin Collins as well. See you tomorrow, everybody.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program.
Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook.
Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com radio.